Welcome, everyone. I'm Councilman Brad Marler, and we are not privileged to have our mayor here this evening, and so I will move that we nominate Mr. Harris as our mayor pro tem tonight.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Mayor pro tem?
Yes, Buster.
Can you also have that include that he would be the mayor pro tem for the period of time that the mayor is gone in case we need a plat or any other items signed?
I will so move that we nominate Mr. Harris to take over mayor pro tem until we have our mayor back with us.
I'll continue to second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't do anything crazy.
That'll save us some headache in case we need a signature.
Okay. And we're ready to go?
Recording? Okay. Well, welcome everyone to the City of South Jordan City Council study meeting. Today is Tuesday, February 7th, and we are meeting in our study room. We will go ahead and start out with an invocation by Councilmember Don Shelton.
Our Father in heaven, we come before thee this afternoon, and we're grateful for the blessing of being able to gather in these comfortable circumstances. Heavenly Father, we're mindful of our mayor who's traveling. Pray that thou be with her and bless her with safe travels and be with her family as well. We thank thee for the privilege of being able to participate in our government, and we pray that thy spirit will be with us and guide us and help us to be wise in the things that we do and say, that we may bless the lives of those who live here or who will live here in the future in South Jordan. We're grateful for our staff and for their expertise and the work that they do to help lead and guide this city. Pray that thou bless them and their own particular needs. We're grateful for the food that thou hast blessed us with, and ask thee to please bless it. And we ask these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Thank you. And I'll acknowledge that all of our council members are here today, so thank you everyone for being here. And thank you for city manager and city staff. We will go ahead and move forward to amount mayor and council coordination. Does anyone have any items that they'd like to bring forward?
This Saturday, I know Brad's out and Tamara's out. Anyway, we have the first of the Saturday morning reports from the legislators. So it'll be 3 weeks in a row. It'll be this Saturday, next Saturday, and the following Saturday. And the first one will be at Riverton Hospital, and there'll be breakfast provided. And should be a interesting time to talk to the legislature.
What time does that start?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
I plan on attending that as well.
Yeah, I think I'll be there as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Would anybody else appreciate having that plugged in our calendars? I know I would.
No, they send out a calendar invite.
They send an email, but I'm just saying if we wanted to have Stephanie plug that in.
Just put an invite.
No, I'm
could we ask that? Yeah, sure. That'd be great. With the address and just send it. Yeah. For me, it would be more top of mind.
Three meetings.
Yeah. And we may. Well, we need to send out a notice.
Yeah, we'll. Anna's got a note. We'll notice that as a potential quorum that you'll be together.
That's great.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else that needs to come?
That's all
before the group?
No, that's the only thing.
I got the 25th down, but I don't have the other two down. Stephanie.
Actually, it came from not Stephanie. Okay.
Hey, Don, do they have a Zoom link for that meeting, too? Or is
it's just in person this time. Susan Schilling is who sent it.
Yeah, she's in West Chamber?
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
I have an item I want to bring forward. Dustin, you and I spoke about this earlier. You know, with all the, we've had a lot of snow, which has been fantastic. That's something we definitely want. And with that, I've noticed it's created some potholes, you know, more than what we're used to seeing. I think we probably, you know, haven't seen those as many in the past years because we haven't had as much snow. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, just kind of talking a little bit about, you know, what the impact that's going to have.
Yeah, and I'll let Jason, who's the real expert, speak to this. But yeah, when we have lots of moisture and freezing temperatures, it does tend to break our roads up a little bit more. And our crews in between the plowing of the snow spend their time out fixing the potholes. Some of it they can do with cold patch, because it depends on what days the plant that creates the hot mix only has it available certain days. And when we can get the hot mix, we go out and fix as many as we can. But Jason, Director Rasmussen, do you want to add anything on what your teams are doing with the potholes?
Yeah, so we've had a real winter.
Yeah.
We've gotten used to it. We have a good winter like this where there's frequent snowstorms, the freeze thaw, it finds those cracks and we get more potholes. So one of our limitations has been the asphalt plant. They haven't been making hot mix as often as we'd like. And so we replaced our patch truck, but we had our old ones. So on the days that they are making hot mix, which has been pretty infrequent, we send both patch trucks out to get as many potholes as possible. And if we can get the hot mix asphalt, that's the stuff that stays. Otherwise, when we use the cold patch, it usually breaks and busts out during the next snowstorm. But it's something that temporarily relieves the
just
potholes.
A band-aid, huh?
Yeah.
So our biggest challenge, other than the weather, has been the plant that supplies hot mix for Salt Lake Valley. We've talked to other public works departments, and they're experiencing the same thing with just not being able to get the right asphalt for winter to patch those up. But we've made some progress. There's still some out there. We have a list, and so when we get hot mix, we get both trucks going and fill as many as we can.
So you're getting out there often as you can every time you can get the material, basically.
Yeah, honestly, it's only been once a week that we've been making it. The plant's been burning hot mix, so
yeah.
We've been relegated to just about a day a week being able to go out and
get
as much as we can.
Okay. I'll send a news article to you. Some of you may have already seen this, but last month, Rachel Van Cleve, our PIO, did a story with KSL News. They were doing kind of highlighting potholes around the valley. They actually pointed to South Jordan as one of the cities that was aggressively out there filling potholes and doing a good job. And I'll forward that link if you haven't seen the news story, or you can watch that.
And if I could, Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes.
Isn't it true that, like, our major artery, 114, 106, is their state roads?
Correct.
So who does those repairs?
The state maintains those. There's not a whole lot to repair there. A lot of that's concrete, so you don't get the asphalt breaking up. West of Bangor, there are roads. So west of Bangor on both those, we maintain those.
But as I'm going from Bangor to Redwood on 114,
yep, that's
state.
Off. Yep. All the way to I-15.
Do we alert them, or do they just stay on top of that?
No,
because it's not good.
So when if we see some things, we will let them know. We'll contact them and let them know. And to be honest, their response time isn't great.
I'm not surprised. So we have alerted them because 114th is bad.
There's a section wet between 40th West and the roundabout Daybreak. That area has been problematic, and that's the area that we try to get in with cold mix. It breaks out the next snowstorm, and so once we get hot mix, we can.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing it. I think I'll take the snow if it, you know, that means
yeah.
You know, it comes with
it's
some potholes. Yeah, it's a good trade-off.
We need
it, but, you know.
And if you happen to find a pothole, let us know. We'll add it to the list and get a crew out there.
Yeah, well, that sounds good. Okay, thank you. Any other items that need to come before the council? Okay.
All right, we'll move on to item D, discussion review of the regular council meeting. So the first action item is Resolution R-2023-09, authorizing the mayor to enter into an interlocal cooperation agreement with Salt County for 2022 through 2028 UPDS media campaign cost sharing.
Dustin, do you want to? I'll turn that.
Yeah,
over.
That's our opportunity to gain some economy of scale. We're required under UPDES to do certain things to educate the public about stormwater. You've probably seen the ads that your storm drain drains to the river, those kinds of things. Since we're required to do that, we have two options. We can do it on our own and create that marketing and things, or we can join together with the Stormwater Coalition, pool our resources, get more bang for our buck. And what that is, Director Rasmussen has brought an agreement to us where we will pay our portion, and it will go to the team that will put those together. So it's much more fiscally responsible with our funds to meet the federal and state mandates for stormwater education. So that's what that one's about.
Okay. Any questions on that item?
No. Okay. All right, we'll move forward. We have our public hearing items, amending the future land use map. We have another one, rezoning property located 108 28 South, 1055 West. And then we have ordinance 2023-02, adopting and amending an updated impact fee for water and transportation with the last holdout properties. And then we also have ordinance 2023-03, adopting and amending an updated impact fee for water and transportation within the Lark Meadow properties. Any discussion on any of these particular items or any questions?
I don't know if Director Schaefermeyer wants to speak to the first two. Don's doing the last two. So on the first two, that's in that area down around 1055 West. You may see some of the same faces that we had recently on the Rise development, because it's in that same general vicinity. But this is very similar to other rezones that you have seen previously. And then the last two items, Don Tini's been working closely with Lewis Young on the impact fees that need to be charged on some properties out on the west side. And he and Fred Philpott will be here to present those numbers to what those impact fees should be for the development of those areas.
Okay. Any questions, Council? Okay. All right. Thank you, Dustin. We'll move on to item E, discussion item, interfacility transport discussion, and we'll turn that time over to Fire Chief.
I'll preface that before I hand it over to the Chief. Okay. Last week when we met in our budget meeting, we had talked about several things. And in that, you guys had asked that we send you some additional information. And I'm working on that email about some of our service levels and what would happen if we didn't fill some of those positions that had been requested or some of the programming. We met the day after with the Chief, and we discussed our interfacility transport program and the request for some personnel there. And I wanted to bring that back to you because this is an area of our operations where we have a real opportunity to make a difference in our service levels, to maintain what we're doing, to enhance that for the future, as well as to alleviate some of the strain that our current program has. And I've asked the Chief to bring his presentation and give you an overview of what that looks like. And if it's something that you feel comfortable about, I would highly recommend that we consider pursuing that into the next budget year. It does require hiring some people and the acquisition of some equipment, but the program would pay for itself as well as generate some additional revenue. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the Chief to give you the details, and then we can have some discussion.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a great overview. So members of the Council, appreciate the opportunity to meet with you this evening and talk about our IFP program. We've got some unusual challenges in the program right now, but we've also got some great opportunities, and I think we've come up with some good solutions that will really be beneficial to our residents and our community. So I wanted to give you kind of an overview of where we're at with those. The issue that we have is, in many ways, our interfacility transport program has been, in some ways, too successful. So in that we have grown at a very, very rapid pace, and it's getting to the point where it's putting quite a bit of strain on our current ambulance units, the crews that are running those ambulance units, and they're starting to feel some significant fatigue due to the interfacility program. And overall, we are just expanding at a much more rapid pace than even I anticipated. We'd come up with some conservative ideas of where our call volume was headed, and we have jumped way beyond those in a much quicker fashion than even I expected we would. Last year, we saw a 21.18% increase in our 911 transports. So those were actual transports by ambulance to the hospital. We saw an 11% increase in interfacility transports and a total increase in our calls of 14%. So fortunately, we had added Station 64 in to take some of that load. But again, we have grown way beyond our actual capacity than really where we thought we would get. We had kind of given some projections on where we thought that the maximum amount of interfacilities that could come out of the Daybreak facility, the Daybreak University facility, and we have actually exceeded that, and we still expect that to continue to grow. So it's been a bit of a challenge that way. You can see this is the graph that I've shown you over the last couple of years that we've kind of done that. And this was kind of our conservative projection line for where we thought our calls would go. That green line represents our actual calls run last year. So you can see we jumped way ahead. We didn't think we would be at that call volume until probably 25 or 26. We're several years ahead.
I'm curious, is that because our population grew that much faster, or our percentage of calls per population went up faster?
It is a combination of things. We really tried to narrow it down. We haven't seen any particular area of call that has jumped. It's just everything has increased kind of proportionally. I will say that elderly care facilities has had a pretty big impact on that. The number of interfacilities that we're running has had an impact on that. And I also believe that because we've opened Station 64, we are also now more available to handle the calls inside of South Jordan, and we're relying less on mutual aid, so we're handling more of our own. So I think a combination of all of those factors has created this big increase in calls, and we expect this to continue. I'm confident we won't go down. I don't think we'll grow at that rate next year, but we're on track for already, even now, to we're exceeding our projections.
Chief, if I could just ask you as well, are some of those outside of, how many of those, what that percentage growth are actually outside of our South Jordan boundaries?
So that number right there actually represents only calls in South Jordan.
Only
city.
Inside, okay.
So our folks are running mutual aid calls outside of the city, okay, in addition to these. So our actual call volume is in excess of 7,000. With the new CAD system, it's very difficult to determine exactly how many we're running. Unfortunately, that's a weakness of the new CAD, but that represents just numbers here in the city.
Wow.
So.
Thank you.
One of the challenges that we have is in interfacility transport, we monitor all of these consistently, and they consistently come back at 2 hours and 5 minutes. So from the time we head out, pick up a patient, deliver them up to the main campus, get back to the city, it's 2 hours and 5 minutes. So every time that ambulance is gone, that's an ambulance that's not available to run a 911 call. So when those are out and they're happening very consistently, that's a concern for me, because I want to make sure we have ambulances in the city to deal with our 911 calls. A third of our total IFTs are happening between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. So our folks are up at night a lot. And, you know, you can imagine if you're out at 1 o'clock in the morning on an interfacility transport, it's not till after 3 that you're back in the station and get restocked, go back to bed. It's causing some fatigue issues for our folks in that area. So, but my big concern really is just that large number of IFTs is keeping some of our ambulances out. Now, I want you to know that we do reserve ambulances and keep them in the city so that we always have ambulances to deal with emergencies, but not as many as I would like, quite frankly. So our crews are starting to report. I try to keep a good pulse on our folks. They're starting to report an increase in fatigue and stress. Because we're on a rotation, for example, even when they go to bed, they know they're up on rotation. They're telling me they're not sleeping well because they're just assuming they're anytime they're going to get out and roll out on a call. And so that's been kind of an interesting dynamic that we've been trying to work through. So overall, in our employee survey, that's really the only area that we saw any areas of complaint was in the interfacility side of things. Otherwise, they feel good, but this does create a bit of a problem for us for recruitment and retention. And I will say that some neighboring agencies actually advertise the fact that they don't do IFTs as a bonus to go to them. We've got UFA and some of these others that are doing lateral trans hires. So I'm really trying to maintain my staff and manage what we can here.
So do all your EMTs do IFTs?
Yes. Everybody rotates through that. And one of the ways we manage fatigue is to rotate people from a fire engine onto that ambulance, right? So if somebody's up and they're really running hard, we do have some flexibility to rotate those folks, but it's still a challenge for us. So what we would really like to do is find a good balance of personnel and transport units that will allow us to continue to manage the number of interfacility transports that we're currently running, but also keep ambulances available in the city to handle the emergency calls. We want to make sure that we have an increase in overall employee satisfaction. We want our current workforce to feel good about what it is we're doing and find that good balance. Overall, I don't think they have any problems running interfacility transports. It's just the sheer number that we've been running that's really been the issue. It's also been really a great thing for us as far as the revenue that we've been able to generate for the city. It pays for our fire trucks, it pays for our equipment, and it's really been advantageous for us in the revenue side of things. And we want to maintain that for the city. The other thing we want to do is continue to maintain or improve our recruitment retention. I think we've got, quite frankly, second to none reputation in our industry, and we have a lot of folks that want to work for us, and we want to maintain that moving forward. So we looked at a lot of different solutions. We actually went to the staff and we asked them for a variety of solutions and what they thought might be good fixes for it, and we evaluated these based on cost, benefits, and so forth. And so I'm going to run through the big ones that came out. So obviously the first one that we could do would be to contract with private ambulance, so we could give away a portion or all of our interfacility transports. We don't feel like that's a very good idea at all, because that takes revenue directly away from the city, interferes with our operations, so we just don't see this as a viable solution. Quite frankly, I think our service delivery to our patients and to the Daybreak Health Center would decrease. I will tell you that those folks out there love our people. They're doing a wonderful job, and they provide a top-notch service, and I think we would be giving something up if we were to do this. We don't see that as a good option. This is a what we call a kitchen table solution. So our folks threw at us to add a little bonus that for everybody that does a transport, they get a $50 fee on top of that, or added to their paycheck. I don't know that that's feasible, but it was something that they threw out. The big issue what this doesn't do is it doesn't deal with the call per person ratio, right? It doesn't address the problem. We just see that as a band-aid, and as we know, $50 might be great today, but tomorrow it'll have to be 60, right? So we don't see that as a viable solution either. Another option, we've done this in the past historically with our interfacility program, is to staff an additional ambulance through pure overtime, give our folks the chance to come back on overtime and run on their days off and run that ambulance. The big issue that I have here is, on some level, I don't want to subject my staff to that, although I do think that the overtime is a great opportunity. I think to do it once in a while is fine. To do it on a very regular basis concerns me to some degree. While it does address the problem, it's also our costliest solution. We figured that would cost between $800,000 and $950,000 annually to staff an ambulance with two people 365 days a year. Very costly for us. So our preferred solution and our fix that we think would work very well here would be to add a medical-only transport unit to the system. So these wouldn't be firefighters, they would be paramedics. There's really very few, if any, opportunities for people to just be paramedics in the state of Utah. If you want to be a paramedic, you pretty well have to be a firefighter to make that happen. There are a few exceptions to that, but very few. And very few in government. And so we think this is unique, and we're very confident that we would have no problem filling these spots. We hear from a lot of folks that they would love this opportunity. They're very interested in the medical and, quite frankly, not interested in being firefighters. So in order to make that work, we would need a minimum of 6 FTEs. That's our suggestion. So we would start with 6 paramedics. We would need a modest amount of overtime, I think, just to cover for vacation or sick leave, things like that, to give some of our regular staff a chance to do that. And I think that's an incentive, periodic incentive for them, too. The cost to outfit those medical-only personnel is significantly less than the fire. Cost to train them is very, very low. I don't have to put turnout gear on them. I don't have to put a lot of the PPE and equipment that we would normally put on firefighters. I don't have to do that with these folks. So that's very helpful. Big cost savings in that. Our fleet costs for procurement, we would put them on a van-style ambulance. I don't need to put air packs, fire tools, turnout gear on the ambulance with them, and so I can use a smaller vehicle. That vehicle cost is about half of what we're currently paying for an ambulance. It's also substantially cheaper to run, so it gets much better gas mileage, preventative maintenance is much less, so it's very efficient to run. We would run that unit first out on all inner facilities, so every time it's available, they would just be up and taking those. That'll take a tremendous amount of pressure off of my current ambulance staff. It does require an upfront investment in the equipment and personnel, and I'll show you how we can pay for that. So again, six FTEs, modest amount of overtime. In order to make this work, I do need the addition of one program manager as well. And the reason is this. If you know Chief Richards, Mike Richards, he runs a lot of our special events. I task him with a great deal, and he's a bit up to his ears in everything that he runs. He does a wonderful job for us. He does really everything that's listed up there right now for us. So I simply need to break that out and have another supervisor there. And so part of my request is to split that up, to leave Chief Richards over our medical division. He would oversee this program among everything else he's doing, and then we would add another administrative division chief to kind of separate and allow us some flexibility. Quite frankly, with the growth that we've had inside of our organization, we need that anyway. So this is very advantageous for us.
So would they back each other up too if one's out?
Or? Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have tight-knit staff that way, and they all kind of cross help. When we look at the potential for return on investment, not only are we running a lot more in the actual transports, every year we're increasing in the revenue that we receive from those. And that's a fact of the state rates on ambulance transport. So we have a negotiated rate that's based on that base transport rate. And so we're actually seeing increases every single year as far as what that looks like. This has been our growth curve as far as our revenue return to the city in just a short amount of time. So 17, 18, 19, this is when I came on board and started making adjustments to the program. You can see we saw a massive increase here. We're quite frankly tapped in our ability to continue to manage this in an appropriate way. But the good news there is, though, our revenues are remarkable. I don't think anybody in the state is doing what we're doing.
So, I mean, I'm guessing right now, since you're tapped, I mean, there are occasions that you have to decline an IFT transport, right?
So, yes. So, right now, those are Gold Cross is our backup. So, okay. If we can't fulfill it, then we would call Gold Cross in to take.
So, approximately, where would this, you know, revenue be if, you know, if you weren't having to give up those opportunities?
So, an average of 1.5 transports additional a day will pay for this, what I'm suggesting, all of our FTEs, more than 100%. So I only have to pick up 1.5 to actually do it. I don't know what that number is, but I'm confident it will be substantial. Our ability to, what we envision here is to be able to take this and actually create its own EMS division, be separate from the fire department, obviously run by the fire department. But what that'll do is give us a lot of opportunity for the future to grow and expand or even contract as things change for us. I'm very confident that there's going to be things in the future like community paramedicine. I think that's going to be a big issue. We're launching our critical care paramedic program, which will allow for second to none care for our community. This will give me some flexibility to deal with that. And it also allows me to use that unit for high acuity patient transports, those that might go otherwise by like AirMed or Life Flight, to actually be ground transported by our units to, they'll be faster, more efficient, and every bit as capable as those helicopters. So that's a program we're building as well. So our vision for the future and what we're trying to do on the EMS side is substantial. And so the revenues for this have all been much more than paying for themselves. So,
Chief, with the, you know, revenue being so advantageous to work and support a program, what keeps a company like Gold Cross from just coming in and trying to take this market over themselves?
Yeah, great question. Because we hold a license for it. We are the only fire department in Salt Lake County that actually holds the license to do this. And so they can't, by law, come in. So we have a contract with them to back them up. And actually, we're in the works of working with a contract to back them up as well.
So no one can come in and just undercut to try and take over the market.
We have a free enterprise system in our ambulance program in the state of Utah. It's a monopolistic system done by licensing by geographic boundary.
Okay.
So every license has a boundary, and it has this clear indication of what you can do within that boundary.
Okay.
And our license includes not only the emergency type calls that you would normally see in transporting, but we have an interfacility transport license as well, which we fought 10 years for to get that with Golden Cross.
Do you guys remember a few years ago we were fighting Guardian Transport and others at the legislature?
Mm-hmm.
That was all in an effort to preserve this part of
the
license, the interfacility. They were edging in on that, and my union were breaking the law and infringing on their license. We got the law clarified. But this is all in that same field.
And they realized they were in a space they couldn't be. They've kind of moved over to an area that had its own niche in a way. Mental health transports.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can't control what the legislature might do someday.
Yeah.
We all know that. But this is going to be – this has been here since its inception of Utah's medical laws, this type of program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's to prevent – 5 ambulance showing up at your traffic accident going, hey, we got the cheaper deal. Let's take you,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of a thing. And this undercutting business.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does do is we don't control costs. The state regulates all the fees that you can charge, the mileage, the fuel, the cost of medical supplies and treatments, all that's regulated by the state.
And there have been attempts last year, a little bit of inquiry this year, legislature to change the system. I'm not worried about that now because we're first aid. So if they change the system, let's say a year from now, I think we would be best positioned to pick up hospitals because in a facility, it matters where you transport from. So where you leave from. We leave from South Jordan, therefore that's our license. They blow up the license system, we could probably take Riverton's Hospital, West Jordan's Hospital, Harriman's emergency room and Sandy's own Beat Hospital probably within a couple months if we could find the staffing.
Okay.
Because we would be the first ones with the right equipment and right people and relationship.
Very little risk to this.
Yeah.
So does each city then hold a license? Are you saying we have a license?
They're all exclusive and they're very,
most
they're very specific. So other cities went to get this license. The reason we got it is because Gold Cross had no infrastructure in our city ever.
Mm.
And we proved that. And through a court process, we were given the license and based on our history of what was here in the day. So, but each license is separately carved out. And like, for instance, our neighbors to the north, West Jordan, they were trying to get an interfacility at one time or those kind of transport. They ended up negotiating their license with, and they have a completely different license agreement with Gold Cross, and they have a different way that they're structured with the state to what kind of transports they can do. And everybody has their own. So like Salt Lake City, for instance, they don't do any medical. They have no licensing for ambulance service. They have license for paramedic service, but they don't do transport. That's done by Gold Cross. And that's probably historical and a lot of different factors, whatever. But this is done throughout the entire state. These geographic licenses hold through all through the state. And it usually follows a political boundary for most cases, like for cities. So our license is our boundary of our city boundary. Currently, we'll have to make an adjustment if it changes, but it's typically that boundary, and then it gives us whatever we can convey service-wise through that license.
And Gary's being somewhat humble in that 25 years ago, Gary, there was a question where many cities were giving up the interfacility license without a fight, and Gary held on to ours as then fire chief. That's allowed us to be ahead of most cities, I think. Does Layton do their own interfacilities?
They do.
There's a handful of cities that do them, but not many. And in Salt Lake County, we might be before a few of them made inroads a few years ago.
So we're the only one in Salt Lake County. We only facilitate our city.
Correct.
And the rest are using another source.
We have different arrangements. It can be a combination of the city and a Gold Cross or a private ambulance or something.
And we back up other cities.
We do by mutual aid agreement, and I am in currently working a contract. So Gold Cross has actually approached us and asked us to help them. And one of the issues that we're having in this corner of the valley is they are typically unavailable to handle these calls. And so, again, this is another advantage for us, that is, this may be very scalable, that if we are able to pick up, again, 1.5 transports pays for this thing, and I'm confident we will more than exceed that.
Sure.
More than pay for this, and again, bring more revenue to the city. But yeah, I feel like we're carving out a situation here that would be very advantageous for us in the future. And we guard this license very, very carefully, and we take it very seriously. And quite frankly, I mean, I hate to be boastful, but I think we're the best in the business. You know, these folks would rather call us all day long. I have regularly hospitals from around the area reach out to me and ask if we'll do them for them. And because we don't hold the license, I have to tell them no. But we are working a situation where I'm confident we'll be able to do that, especially on the critical care level, which is so much more important for our patients.
And so, I don't know if you know this or not, but the helicopters have been removed from Salt Lake County. They're not flying inside here not hardly at all anymore. The actual helicopters are stationed outside of the county now, and it's because of the proximity of trauma centers and stuff within a reasonable place.
They've changed
the protocols a bit on how they're doing that. But this critical care ambulance program we're talking about is a piece that it kind of fulfills that on the ground, what you can get from a helicopter.
If we call for a helicopter to bring that type of service to us, usually it's not even transport. Usually we'll call them for advanced airway management, a chest tube, or some different things like that. We're typically waiting on a good day 20 minutes, so often 20 to 30 minutes. They're coming from Tooele, sometimes Provo, Ogden, but they're not in the valley anymore. Ever since they opened iMed in Murray, it's just quicker to go by ground, and so it's just not for them to have them in the valley. They were not getting called anymore very often, and so they moved them out. So sometimes they're as far away as Rock Springs.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I think the good part for this, too, is that this isn't taxpayer money. This all comes from a third party. The good thing about our contractual arrangement with the U is the U is the payer. We're not going through an insurance provider. So if you go back and look at our collection rate that we do, our discounted rates that we have to provide for Medicaid and Medicare on the emergency side of the business, much different than this. This is fully paid upfront cash. So it's saved our taxpayers millions of dollars in just the fire equipment over the life of this program alone that we've paid for, and not having to bond for fire equipment or having to not be able to have cash to provide.
Did we not pay all or a significant portion of, is it Station 62 that's?
63.
63.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
It was a big chunk of it, if not all of it.
Chunk of it was, yeah. And impact fees.
Right.
Can I make another clarifying question, Mayor Pro Tem? Thank you. You said 1.5 IFTs will more than pay for this. Is this 1.5 a day?
Correct.
Okay, so 1.5 additional transports will cover everything that you're wanting to grow.
Correct.
And you see us easily getting 1.5 more calls a day.
Easily. Yeah, very easily.
And our crew could facilitate 5 more calls a day, 6. I mean, what could, if this is approved and we say yes, what's the capacity that you could grow from where you are?
It's not, so across our, I would say 3.5 to 4 units, depending on my staff, which we're building filling open slots. It's not unusual for us to do 21 transports in a day. So any single unit could, you know, I could conceivably do, you know, this unit could do 6 straight a day without much difficulty. Yeah, the numbers are quite staggering when you really look at them. So it's amazing how much it's grown. Some of the savings we'll see, as I mentioned, that type 1 ambulance, about half the price to procure, which is great. I haven't even run these numbers. According to our fleet manager, we expect that this would cost us about $8,400 in PMs and fuel and stuff to run. But just savings alone, by taking that mileage and the pressure off of our other ambulances, we'll save $7,420 on those alone. So our net cost is under $1,000 to run this ambulance for a year. So that's how much more efficient that unit is for us to run. Again, the onboarding costs are significantly less than for firefighters to bring these folks on board. As far as what we hope to recapture, quite frankly, just the growth alone that we've seen just this year already more than pays for everything that we're asking for. So we've already paid for it just this year in increase alone. And again, the 1.5 gets us where we need to be, pays for all seven, including my supervisor. So conceivably, in the future, if we had to add another unit, it would only take one transport a day to pay for that additional unit. That's kind of where we're at with this. Again, we see this being scalable in the future, depending on demand and need in the community. So, some future growth opportunities. So the health center is changing the use of the way they use AirMed. So right now, if they have critical patients, they typically fly them. They're going to start giving that cost directly to the patient. I'm very confident as a result of that, those folks out there are going to want to send those patients by ground when they can. Once my critical care unit is fully operational, which should be in the next few months, we will easily be able to take those. And I think there's probably 20 to 30 or more a month just on that side, on the critical care side. We, as I mentioned, we're working out an agreement with Gold Cross, which allow us to go into some of the other area hospitals, especially on the critical care side. So I think that's going to work out very well for them and for us. And then, again, in the future, we could look at adding another. This is, again, you know, very scalable for us. And we've talked about the possibilities. As we start looking at it, there's possibilities of adding an overtime unit just on peak days or peak times to see if it's advantageous to add. You know, we can take baby steps, I guess, is what I'm saying, without having to hire additional FTEs as we look at program expansion. So we have a lot of options moving forward. The benefits, this is really what this is all about, is what I really want to do is keep more ambulances available to handle those emergency calls that are happening in the city. That's important to me. It's also important that we take care of our staff, that they aren't feeling overburdened, stressed, and fatigued like they are right now. And I think that we'll see an increase in job satisfaction by making this change. And again, we've essentially already paid for it with our increase in revenues this year. Certainly the one-time costs for procurement are already paid for and in the bank from our prior IFTs. Everything is good to go that way. So it really doesn't require any additional funding. And I guess, Sunil, you could speak more to that with any questions. But again, we feel very confident that the revenue from this will more than pay for the program, and I think it'll be a great move in the future. So
we'd really like to go ahead and get started on this if you don't have any concerns, because we have to. It takes some time to get a vehicle and get it geared up and that kind of thing. And I'd like to try to get this running in July, so it's running.
It's ready to go on July 1.
So will this be part of the budget?
We don't have to. We couldn't add it in, but it's just cash sitting there.
Is this a enterprise fund? Yeah. I just don't ever remember seeing it in the budget before. Is that?
Yeah, it's there.
It's there. When I just.
Or is it a special fund? What do you call it?
Surprise. Yeah, it's so just a little bit of difference. It's not a true enterprise fund, but it's just a tracking mechanism. We are flowing it through capital project side of the funding.
So it's not in the budget.
So it's not. It's not. No, it's in the budget.
It's just not labeled enterprise.
It's not. It's well, when you talk about different funds, they each have its own requirements, qualifications, kind of thing. So
yeah.
Well, as soon as you start talking about enterprise fund or general fund or special revenue fund, then you have to drill down to make
allocate
sense.
It. Yeah.
You just can't,
separate it.
You know, name anything enterprise fund or what vice versa, right? So, but this is tracked separately by itself. The fund balance and all those kind of things is closed by itself. But in the financial reporting side of things, it gets merged.
With the fire department. Yeah. So I'm not feeling bad about having this.
Unless you live with the budget like Sunil does, you probably wouldn't notice the subtle
pieces. I look, but I
don't
look
pieces.
With it like he does. So.
Sleeps with it under.
I'm kind of looking in the window at it. So. But I'm just curious what the fund balance is since you're tracking it separately. Do you know that just off the top of your head or?
I would say closer to, I guess this is not an exact number, but 2 million plants.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good number.
So the nice thing about this too is, so you know, again, this really positions us in a very unique kind of way in this industry. And really what we want to do is provide the very best care to our residents. That's what this is all about. And we're uniquely positioned to do that. This really gives us some unique opportunity, again, with the development of our critical care program. And again, I am very confident that EMS system is going to change and evolve, and it'll look vastly different in 5 and 10 years from now. And this positions us in a really unique way to take advantage of that and be ready to launch. And I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of folks want to come work here. So, sir.
So would you run this program out of Station 64?
Yeah, I would.
So long term, as the downtown Daybreak area grows, is that facility going to be able to serve for this program plus the additional battalion that we built the station for?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So everything that we're looking at with the future addition of Station 65, potential changes at Station 62 and 64 all have allowed for facilities. So we don't have to do any significant changes at all to house this.
Okay. Great.
One of the things we kind of planned for long term was the addition of another medic unit in Station 64.
Awesome.
So, one question.
Yes.
Go ahead. So, if we were to give our thumbs up on this tonight, then you'd bring that back to for an actual formal vote then in council, or are you saying we don't even need to do that?
I wanted to bring back something after our last discussion, as because you asked what can we do about preventing things from impacting our service levels. This was the lowest hanging fruit of all those options, and one that we can, if you give me a nod, I'll tell the chief, start tomorrow morning and make this happen. And we will just put this in and start going forward with an anticipated program start date of July 1. But this gives him 5 months to get a type 2 ambulance order, to start the job descriptions, looking at the recruitment for the people that he would need to make this program work, to have them on board on July 1.
It would change the reporting because you're going to have FTEs, so the CAFR is going to be adjusted, and
so
you're going
to
see some budget amendments
from
432 to 439. Show more FTEs in the new budget year coming forward. There'll be some changes adjusted that you would approve in the regular budget process that you're doing.
So my last question is for Ryan. So are you hearing any chatter on the Hill there about any kind of change here? Because I sure hate to... I hate to lose this opportunity because it's a good one.
So last year, former Representative Francis Gibson, who now runs a hospital in Spanish Fork, It's in Spanish Fork, but he serves from Mapleton somehow.
Mapleton serves
the
area.
And
yeah,
a council member.
Those two cities got involved. He was trying to blow the whole system up so he could orchestrate it the way he wanted. That failed because of us and many other entities, not just us alone. This year there was a little chatter, and then a few things on the edges that I've heard of. Gary's been following public safety, but nothing significant. And by next year, that's why I chimed in before, by next year, the year after, if they chose to do that, it would probably actually be better for us if there were no licenses, if we wanted to run a full-scale program, because
we just expand.
We would be sitting ready to
You'd
pick
be
up
ready
those
to just
instead of only going out of hospitals in South Jordan, which is really just the U of U Center. We could pick up the Riverton IHC. We could pick up that Harriman one. We could pick up Lone Peak in Sandy and Jordan Valley. If we could get the units and everything, we could pick those up because of what Chief's done with the relationships, what they've done with the quality of service. Those hospitals would have us run within a month or two if we could do it. So
we could do
the
it
risk is
we
very
could
low.
It.
If, even if they blew it up, in fact, if they blew it up,
oh, absolutely, yeah,
we would probably be in a better position than if they don't destroy it. And we'd never push for that because there's some great things about the system that benefits the community.
We would be able to show the effectiveness.
Of
what we're doing.
We'd just be growing our market. Basically, we could walk into all the hospitals and solicit them. Some may choose us, some may not, but we wouldn't lose the hospitals we have.
Thank you.
There is a piece of legislation, and Gary or Ryan can probably speak in better detail to it, that would change the retirement for the paramedic-only which would significantly help us in the recruitment of people to fill these FTEs.
Huh.
And it only applies to those that work in the government sector that provide this type of medical service, which would be attractive to maybe individuals who don't currently work for a local government to jump across and work for a local government. And that's to our advantage to if that bill were to pass this year.
So there's a number of rural cities or smaller towns that run a lot of EMTs, and they're not able to be in the state retirement system as a public safety employee. So there's a bill to change that. So paramedics only, not with a non-certified firefighter, or an EMT non-certified firefighter, they can now be in the firefighter retirement system at URS. That's what the bill does.
So it's proposed. It
it's
hasn't
proposed.
Passed.
Yeah, it hasn't passed yet. But if it, I mean, right now everybody's supporting it, and it looks like it's going to be favorable. Like similar to what they did a few years ago with dispatchers and added them to the public safety retirement bit as well. I think this will pass. And what this will do is anybody that's working in a private ambulance company right now, they're not getting a retirement or anything, so I think it gives us a tool to bring some folks over.
So,
fast.
So if you're a gold cop cross paramedic, you're not in, and you never work for any public agency, you're not in that retirement.
Another good thing for our timing to start this program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So is the, I mean, it seems like we have a lot of opportunities to expand, and so we're talking about adding one vehicle right now. You know, what happens, you know, if your analysis later on, you know, determines, hey, you know, to, we could justify having, you know, another vehicle, you know, and, you know, do we have to, and we have to hire, you know, for every vehicle, what, six paramedics is what comes with the vehicle?
Approximately, yeah.
So is the timing to approve this? I mean, can we, you know, throughout the year just approve to add one of these, or do we need to do this more during the budget time because we're adding, you know, having an employee increase on that? Or how does that work if all of a sudden we see additional opportunity to grow this program?
Personally, I think we can bring it back into discussion and add it.
Okay.
Even if it was, in Sunil's opinion, we needed to formally amend the budget, you could amend the budget at any time and add that into the employee.
Mike, I want to – that's – I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but I think this is a – great thing that's being proposed to us. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. I also want, you know, my request would be, hey, the moment we think we can get expand and do more, then I think we should come back to the council and say, hey, we're ready to expand more. I don't think we need to wait till the next budget session, you know, budget meeting.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I think we've got some plans in place to kind of test the waters a little bit, and then have a pretty good idea of what this will do. And that way we can come back with some good data to give you to say, hey, we're ready to make that next move.
Okay.
So may I ask another question? So if we say yes to this tonight, which looks like we are, you would go to work on this tomorrow. How soon would this actually be functional?
Our goal would be to be functional by July 1.
Also not till July. Okay.
Well, there's a lead time to get the Type 2 ambulance and to get it here, to create the job descriptions, to get through that process. I mean, we're only 4.5 months away from July 1.
Amazon does not deliver this type of stuff anymore.
No, but we do have some.
They might come with their prescription plan.
Most of the
by drone.
By side, I feel like I can get. It's going to be the recruitment, the hiring, and
it's going to take a step.
Okay. So then back to Mr. Harris's point, if we're up and running July 1st, could you give us like maybe a quarterly report on this?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. That'd be great.
Yeah. You know, another thing this does is it adds another tool in our toolbox to help support events in our community. You know, when we're required to provide an ambulance at a Bingham High School football game or a standby ambulance at
concert.
A concert over at the Equestrian Center or at our summer fest or our farmers market, we now have an extra very great tool
and
staff
expensive.
To do that. And it's we're not taking an ambulance out of service to go to a football game. We're just using our IFT transport ambulance at that football. So things like that, which really helps us as our community continues to grow and we have events and those kinds of things. It's a good thing.
If we were to have a sports venue, a big one in our city, would that venue need an ambulance at it? Because I know the Daybreak Concert Series always wants a...
Depending on the type of activities, yes, they may be required to have that type of equipment and skill set there. And yes, we would be available for hire. Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
We'll move on. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, can we just get a head nod from everyone who thinks this is okay?
It's not a vote, but yes.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Thank you.
That's great. That's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So nice to see something generating.
Yeah.
That's why I thought I'd bring this one back.
Well, if you think about it, too, without this, we'd be having to use tax dollars to pay for some of the other equipment that we'd need to buy otherwise. So this is a great
opportunity. Yeah. On a new fire truck's $1.3 million, having something that helps us to offset those costs is a great thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And thank you to the younger Gary that helped make this possible.
we fought. Yes, we did.
And I'll tell you, Melinda, that worked really hard the last 2 years of legislature. Mm-hmm. When people realized how much money was there and opportunity and started pushing on the license, it's not just about the money, it's about the better care. We pushed back because we still believe we get better care than a lot of those other units.
Yeah. And I think we're going to, this is just me talking, I just still think you're going to see this whole medical thing morph to more at the street level. This pre-hospital care is going to grow more. And I think we're going to see, I bet you have some on our staff, five nurses working here. I really do believe it's going to. We're going to see some really interesting things happen in this area.
That's right.
So, and we'll be poised to be in front of it and take advantage of it and be the leaders in it. I just think it's going to be.
I have a brother that works for a department now that runs nurses on their ambulances.
Wow. Interesting.
We've just seen in the last, what would you say, Chris, 7 years, the what we're doing in pre-hospital care with paramedics and what meds we treat and the types of sophisticated equipment we're using and things has just escalated because they're seeing the advantage of that in the time, that golden hour type thing where you got so much time to get somebody in a better place. Is just so critical, and we've seen it mostly in our cardiac area, but I'm just saying it's going to expand into more.
Yeah, the one thing we have been able to do with this inner facility program, because we run it now, we've been able to afford and to put very high-end, top-notch equipment, especially in the ventilator side of things, and be able to treat those. Quite frankly, if you were to give the advanced ventilator that we carry to any other fire department, it would just become a paperweight because it takes training and know-how to use it. But because our people are using it on a very regular basis through the interfacility program, they're also applying it in the field, and we're having remarkable success on the respiratory issues in the field as a result of it. So again, we're doing really state-of-the-art medical care, and that's only going to continue to improve. I mean, the changes have been incredible.
So not only does this give me comfort, it makes me never want to be outside the city when I have a problem.
And Tara, you know what, to the credit of these men and women that work in there, that hospital will sit on a patient for 2 hours to wait for our unit to get back.
Because we're not
superior.
Hauling.
And because why? That patient entered there, it's their customer, and they care about their customer care and their patient care because it's going to go back up and stay in their system. Wow. They don't want to lose that. And they trust our people and our people's rapport and their skill sets that they've demonstrated to them has created this relationship where they're like, yeah, we'll wait. We're not going to call Gold Cross because we're going to wait 2 hours for you to get back.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's good.
But if someone is at Riverton Hospital and they want to be transported by our people, that can't happen.
Not unless this arrangement gets done with Gold Cross and they're not available, then we would run out there and grab them. Yeah.
Good to know.
Or unless someone blows the whole system. We'll be asked, but there has been attempts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Well, Council, I'll entertain a motion to recess the City Council study meeting and move to the executive closed session to discuss pending or reasonable element litigation.
So moved, Mayor Pro Tem.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Back to regular session. Can we get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Thank you.